afternoon, and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm very excited to be joined this afternoon by Ashwini, who is here to help us welcome the brand new book, Hot Off the Presses. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Jen. Don't suffer, communicate.
I feel like the title really, we were talking about it in group, actually, on Sunday here at the monastery, that the title, like, you know, many of other Sherry's books, really in itself is a huge teaching about the topic of communication and suffering.
Mm-hmm. Say more, Jen. What were you looking at?
Well, what we were looking at with it was it points at, and I think this is so much of what Sherry's been talking about for years and wanting to write this book, that so much suffering happens in communication. And that, you know, from the, I've begun the book, oh, I'm loving it so much. But one of the things I'm really getting from it is, who am I in communication with? Because without realizing it, so much of the time we're in communication with the, in quote, communication. We're in conversation with the voice in our head. And so that teaching of don't suffer, communicate, points to if I'm suffering, there must be some communication that's not happening here. So let me stop, look, and communicate.
Yeah, well, there's so much in what you're saying for me, Jen, right? Because the book starts out with the reason why the book was written, right? Because Sherry has so often said, if people would just communicate through gritted teeth. And what does that mean was the first question we attempted to answer in the book, right? What does it mean when the guide says, I wish people would communicate? Because the title of the first chapter is really another book on communication, because there are so many books on how to communicate effectively, right? There are tools and techniques and all of that. And that's not what this book is about. It's very specifically a book on exactly what you're pointing to, which is there's suffering related to communication, and it's not, it's on a content and on a process level. So when you said there's suffering around communication, what do you really mean? Well, we find it difficult to say what is going on for us or to say something to another person because of how it might affect them, or feel bad about what we say to people. And so what communication is an exchange of information, but it's never simply an exchange of information. It's loaded emotionally on so many levels. And so the reason it took us so long to write this book at some level is to really, really get to what do we mean by communication, and what are we writing about over here? And it points to that process of there's something, it's a signal distortion process. So I want to say something to you, and you want to say something to me. But it's never just that simple. There's always a whole bunch of factors going on that is not accessible in conscious awareness to the two people engaged in that transfer of information. It's manipulated by conditioning. It's manipulated by ego. It's manipulated by expectation. It's manipulated by assumption. So what happens in an interaction is not pure exchange of information. It's not. And so so we think we're communicating, but we're actually not, because there's so much going on in a communication that we're not present to. So even if we're present to that, we wouldn't say half the things that the voices are saying in our head, right? And yet, the fact that the voice is saying something in my head is causing a level of turbulence for me that I may or may not be aware of, which is affecting my interaction with another person, but I'm not aware of it. They're not aware of it. But there's something going on that's going on, right? And I'm not present enough to say, actually, I'm being interfered with here. I can't actually get to what I want to say to you, right?
Yes.
There's so many levels of it. And I think that's what the book is about, which is pointing to the fact that we really need to look at what we mean by communication. And what is happening in every exchange, And it's a really spiritual opportunity, because if you really want, so I think the last chapter in the book says it so clearly, that we live in a non-separate reality, but we have the ability to experience ourselves as separate. Mm-hmm. And if we have the ability to experience ourselves as separate, then the way we attempt to bridge our connection with another node of intelligence, if you will, is through words. Mm-hmm. And if that bridge is taken over and interfered by something that wants to maintain separation and interfere with connection, then, you know, getting past that process that interferes with it, so that we can truly feel connected, feel non-separate, that's a very spiritual process. And so communication becomes a practice of transcending what stops us from being connected, from experiencing connection.
So first, I want to say that was so beautifully laid out, and I'm going to do it, and maybe others will want to do it as well. But that little section that you just, that would be such a lovely thing to go back and listen to this archive and record that, because there was so much in it, and it's such a good reminder. And it really felt like, Ashwini, that it pointed for me at the way I described it when I was speaking in group about it, was this great, I guess, excitement, recognition, enthusiasm as I began to read the book, because the image that dropped in as you were just describing that was one that Sherry uses in the book, I think, Be the Person You Want to Find, that, so, quote, communication with other people becomes the way ego can create separation, because I can't say what I'm trying to say, and it's frustrating, and you don't understand, and all of those things. And in being able to have this new tool, the communication book, that allows me to recognize what's actually going on, feels like it gives us the opportunity to use that image and be the person you want to find, where instead of, you know, conditioning coming between me and the other person, and therefore communication is a opportunity for separation, it's like I move over on the same side, the same team as everyone else on the planet, and now I'm looking at how communication is actually a vehicle for connection, not separation.
True. Yeah, connection. You're on the same side looking at it rather than it being between us causing the issue, right?
Exactly. And the only way we can do that is through the awareness of what's happening, which, again, as I'm starting to read the book, that's what it's doing, is to, there's this one page early on that I've made a copy of, all the things to sort of a checklist. Okay, so when I realize I'm being talked out of communicating, there's this list of, is it this, is it this, is it this, is it coming from fear, is it coming from, you know, all these possibilities. And by just doing that, that's bringing what was unconscious to the level of awareness, which is the first huge step in not having it be a source of suffering.
Well, and there were so many fun things about writing the book, right? Jen, at least for me. So the arc of the book is sort of in the first chapter, really, why do we need another book on communication, and what are we really talking about here, right? So then when you establish that there's a distortion signal always operating, what are some of the signs to know that ego is what is involved in communication, or egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate is what's involved in communication? How do you recognize that? That's the way you bring awareness to it, right? So that's the second chapter. And then it's a set of tools, because the first thing that we've got to do is get really clear. Get clear on what's going on for you. Rather than being in an ego communication where we're voicing what ego says or what ego does not want us to say without any conscious awareness of it, really to get clear, get connected to your experience. And once you're clear about your experience, see what needs to be said, right? That's the getting clear part. And then the challenging part is, once you're clear, it doesn't mean that conditioning is not going to come in to interfere with you with all of your fears or all of your whatever's going on for you in the delivery of the information, right? And mm-hmm. so we walk through the tools of facilitation, of reflecting, of drawing out, of mm-hmm. clarifying, of processing. What do we mean by those specific words in terms of techniques and how to practice mm-hmm. with that? So really, what are they? What can you engage in terms of the techniques of practice that facilitate you interacting with someone in order to have a communication that leads to connection, mm-hmm. right? What can you practice with after you get clear? And then there's a whole chapter on all of the case studies. When do you say something? When do you not say something? When do you mm-hmm. practice restraint? When do you stop believing the voices? How do you rehearse? There's a set of how do you implement all of these techniques? And that's how the book is laid out. And the fascinating thing for me too, while we were writing the book, is it was based on an email class we did on communication. So there's nothing in this book that is made up. There's no situation that was not brought to the table by someone going through something. Work, boss, partnership, animals, silence, whatever it is, mother-in-law, brothers, every situation someone actually asked a question, and we used the situation to illustrate the point that we're making in the section of the book. And so it's it was one of those. I spent, I think, a year going through every response and categorizing it and working out where in the book it would go through and what we would use and what we wouldn't use and how Sherry would respond to that and how did it fit into the arc of the book. But it's relevant, right? Because it was written four very specific issues and challenges that people had in communicating.
And direct experience.
Direct experience. And I think the device of the book is fun, too, because it's written as an advice column.
It is fun.
So someone writes in and says, what do I do about this? And there's a response that's given. And I know Sherry said when we were doing this, right, that, you know, I always say the same thing. But there's not one single thing that is said that the nuance of it is a repetition. We do say it over and over again, but the content and the specific flavor of how to work with it, how to work with it, is different for every question. It's a huge book. I mean, it's a commitment to read it.
Well, and like all of the books that Sherry writes and that you write, because it's written from direct, I have never thought of that before, but it's written from direct experience, that it's not hard to get through. Because all of it, again, I was talking about that when I was talking about it in group, it's this sense of like, right. So that nuance, you may never have actually thought of that nuance, but it's not something you got to go, well, I'm not really sure, I got to think about. It resonates immediately because it is direct experience. So it's not hard to read it.
It's not hard to read it, and yet if you read it four different times, you would get some different nuance from it, right? It's that's the thing about, oh my God, I never thought about it that way. And so you could read the book at different levels. You could just read it, or you could read it and work with it, or you can, record it and listen to it. And there's a teaching that's applicable for pretty much every situation that we would encounter in life if the content is flipped, because the process we can, as you said, we can relate to the process of it.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, so much more we could talk about, Ashwani, and I do see that it's past 5 o'clock, or top of the hour, I should say, depending on what time zone folks are in. Was there anything else you wanted to add in before we end?
Well, we loved illustrating it, Jen. There's actually drawings that Sherry drew in the book.
Well, the illustrations are fabulous. It was completely so fun. And,
it was
and
fun.
Had so much
well, that
to
was it.
It
was fun writing it, you know? It was fun. It, the whole process is always a workshop.
Yeah.
Right?
And a teaching in the way that you let... Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No.
Well, just very quickly, a teaching in the way that you laid it out, which is that it just gives me so much encouragement in the process of staying with it. Like, okay, why are we writing it? And what exactly do we mean by communication? And not pushing it to just finish a book to finish a book, but letting just that looking process that's so exquisite and letting life unfold it. And then when it's time, the book is written. That's such a teaching in itself.
And the book writes itself. Right.
Mm,
that to me is the privilege of collaborating with Sherry is to learn how life writes or how life wants the book. And so the 3,000 different drafts later, this is life's work.
Yeah.
You know, it's got nothing to do with me. And I would say Sherry would say the same and June would say the same that. Mm. This was a distillation of how life winnowed its words, right? And to me, participating in that is just a beautiful, it's just a beautiful process. And I would say that it was completely, it's a Sangha process, right? Something would happen in a radio show and that would spark a particular thread or a discussion or a point that needed to make itself into the book, and we would not know how to do that, but we would note it or write it, and then it would weave itself into the tapestry of the book, and we could make that connection. And so the book was never written in isolation. It was written in participation with everybody who participates in practice.
Well, it certainly is a gift to everyone who participates in practice. I can say that from my own direct experience. So great gratitude to you, to Sherry, to June, and as you say, to all of Sangha for that beautiful collaboration.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I guess it's available
feel like we wrote it.
Right. Keepitsimple.org, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
I believe
where
so.
Folks can get it. Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Winnie.
Thanks, Jen.
Okay. Take care.
Take care. Don't suffer. Communicate.
Thank you. I'll take that guidance.
Yes. All right. Thanks, Jen.
All right. Bye-bye.
I may I say one more thing,
yes,
Jen? I
think please. Absolutely.
It's so abstract, right? Like we're talking about the book and the process of writing it or whatever else. But what I think would be what's going to be wonderful as everyone reads it is that we're going to have such very specific experiences of communicating and working with communication that start to inform our conversations, right?
Yeah.
That's
going to be the
exciting part.
Exactly. Will give us a very particular language and tools. I mean, I was, you know, looking at it all day. So, very exciting.
But everyone has to read it first, right? Then we can start.
Exactly. I know. Oh, so exciting. All right. Thanks again, Ashwini.
Thanks, Jen. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen. And thank you, Ashwini. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Well, I'm checking my mailbox every day, waiting for my copy to arrive.
No, you have to come to center. We have them lined up on the...
We have
them lined up right here. So
when you come on
Thursday night, you just pick up your copy.
Oh, perfect. Oh, even better.
Uh-huh.
Even better.
Uh-huh.
Perfect.
Yeah.
See, there's
no paying for shipping.
Clear communication.
Huh?
I said there's an example of clear communication. So thank you for
that. Yeah.
Yes, that's exciting. I really enjoyed that conversation, and I can't wait to go deeper with communication.
Yeah, because that last part that they were, Ashwini and Jen were talking about, it's really true that so many things we do. So I'm wearing my happy to be here t-shirt. You know, Bev said that, and boom, you know, it just became such a big part of our practice. And go happy, and you know, the one that you refer to periodically, you know, 2013 was the year of no longer feeling bad. And, yeah. You know, so all of these kinds of things that really change us as a Sangha. And that's going to happen with this book, because it's just, as Ashwini was saying, it is Sangha. Everything in that book came from somebody in Sangha. And so that has to have a profound influence on us.
Yes, yes. It's like participation in a
yeah,
way.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Great,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah, you'll find yourself in there, Michael. I'm not gonna tell everybody. I'm not going to tell everybody which one you are, but you'll find yourself in there.
Okay. God, yeah. I look forward to that. I look for the privileged environment. There we go.
That's right. We're not. That's all we're disclosing.
Yes. Yes. Good. And I have announcements here.
All right.
And I should confirm that indeed is the correct email address to order the book. KeepItSimple.org.
Uh-huh.
KeepItSimple.org to get Don't Suffer, Communicate, a Zen Guide to Compassionate Communication.
Uh-huh.
And Reflective Listening Buddies offers weekly support for conscious, compassionate awareness, requiring participants to show up to practice being present. And a new quarter begins October 15th.
Such good practice.
Yes, excellent.
Mm-hmm.
The powerful There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat offers foundational work in going beyond self-hate that is challenging, joyous, scary, and loving, and among the most important work you will ever do. And a retreat is coming up October 7th through 14th.
Yeah, I didn't know that there were still places in that. That's amazing.
Mm.
Yeah, good. Hope somebody is thinking, oh, I wish I could go to that. And now?
Here's your chance.
Mm-hmm.
Step away from the pressures of day-to-day living and immerse yourself in a monastic community completely focused on waking up at the Your Practice Retreat, October 23rd through 30th, at the Zen Monastery Peace Center near Murphy's, California. This retreat offers individualized support with what you choose as your practice focus for the week.
Uh-huh.
And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for today's show. If you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Sherry, you can press *6 and then 1 to make a show. And a conversation of about 5 minutes in length and on one topic is great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think we're ready, Sherry.
All right.
Okay, here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Zoe from the Seattle area.
Hi, Zoe.
Hi, Zoe.
Hi, I haven't called in since I was very young.
Oh, hello, Zoe.
Hi.
Now I know who you are.
Yeah.
Good to hear your
Lisa
voice.
Chris's daughter.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to call in. The voices have been giving me a pretty hard time in the last few months. Yeah, they've been really beating me up over something that happened in June. Basically, I stepped out of my comfort zone for the first time. In that way, I went out with some friends and did normal teenage stuff and, like, TP people's houses and stuff like that. And then, you know, some people were upset about it and posted on social media and all that stuff, and the voices kind of hooked on to that and was like, oh, Zoe, that was a stupid thing to do. Like, why'd you do that? And, like, that was stupid, and you are a horrible person, and that was a horrible thing to do. And so they've been kind of, like, doing this, like, circle of just the same things over and over and over again. And I know my mom says that it's not, like, it's not the content that's the issue. It's the voices knowing that it works for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it just
that
just
they can torture
going.
You. Mm-hmm.
It's full torture. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Can you undo it? Can you change it?
No.
Have any? No. It's done, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just always like to remind myself of that, right? Because if you could go back to, you know, an hour before you were going to go out, and you knew then everything that you know now, you would say, actually, I'm going to pass on that. I'm not going to do that, right? But you didn't know. You didn't know what was going to happen. You had no idea what was going to happen. And we never do. So this, to me, is a really important thing to get early on, that the only way we ever find out what happens is by doing whatever it is and then seeing what happens. And, of course, what the voices want us to do is feel bad and guilty and frightened so that we will live little tiny, frightened, anxious, guilty lives where we're being beaten all the time for imaginary sins, and we feel bad. That's the I don't know if you've noticed this, but a huge percentage of the adults in the world live exactly like that, exactly the way I just described, just small and frightened and guilty and anxious, right? So for you to get this, you know, at your young age, is a really good thing. That's how we learn. That's how we find out. And you learned something, but all you learned is, well, I don't want to do that again.
Yeah.
Right? That's really all you learned. And I would, you know, I can't even hazard a guess of how many hundreds of thousands of those things I've learned over my lifetime. Well, no, I don't think I want to do that again. You know, I can look back and think of all the times that I didn't go to jail and I could have, right? That I didn't get arrested and I could have, right? And so, you know, that's just one of those, wow, I'm really grateful it went that way. And I can look at other people, and it didn't go that well for them. But they really weren't any worse than I was. They just got caught, and I didn't. And that's the big difference. So I just hope that you'll take it to heart. And so if you do, then here's what I would hope for you going forward. And that is that every time those voices, do you record and listen at all?
Yeah.
Okay. So every time those voices start in on you, you simply say, nope, we're not having that conversation anymore. No, we're not having that conversation. Nope, not going there. And every time you turn your attention to what you want instead. And it can be anything. It can be anything. You know, you can hum along your favorite song, or you can choose unconditional love, or you can go into a long diatribe about how important it is to be understanding as people learn difficult life lessons. whatever you want to do instead of listening to that beating, it's up to you. But your response to the beating is, no, we're not having that conversation. And Zoe, you will prove to yourself that you have it within your power to make that choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really super important that you do that. Because,
yeah,
as you know, if those voices decide that they can torture you like this, as soon as they wear this one out, they're going to go on to another one and another one and another one and another one. And you just don't want to let them do that.
Mm-hmm.
What's
well,
that like,
Sherry,
to hear? Yeah, what's that like to hear that, though? Do the voices go, right, that's not going to work? Or do you see it as a possibility?
I do see it as a possibility. I hope that I can continue knowing that it's a process and not an immediate thing.
That's right.
Because every night, like, I talk with my parents about it, and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm good. I'm okay. And then I get up the next morning, and I'm like, dang it. And it just keeps going. And so I hope that
it's right there again.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Right there.
It's right there. And so that's where recording and listening will come in handy. So make a recording that you listen to first thing in the morning. You know, just roll over and hit play on that recorder. And it's about today's a new day. And this is whatever it is for you, Zoe. You know, this is how I want to be mm-hmm. today. This is what I want to focus on. This is what's important to me about my life. I want to be open-hearted and loving. I want to be kind. Whatever it is, so that you are in charge of the conversation. Don't wait, because if you wait and you look for it, you know, is it there? Yep, it's there. Here come the beatings, right? And the other thing that I would offer you, and I hope you'll call again or let us know, you know,
mm-hmm.
we can keep talking about this. But the other thing that is so effective is if you can start making fun of the voices. Oh.
Yeah.
Is that all you've got to say, really? Because I've only heard that about 9,000 times now. So what do you want me to do? What should I do? What should I do with this information? Huh? What do you got? You got any good ideas for me? Because I'm open to good ideas. What do you got? Okay. Because if you try to hide from it or hope that it goes away or that sort of thing, it's just feeding it. So you want to take charge of it in every instant. Either you start the conversation, tell it we're not having that conversation, you make fun of it, whatever puts you in the position of power.
Mm-hmm.
Can you get a sense of that?
Yeah, thank you.
You are
work
so
on that.
Welcome. Good. All right. Thanks, Zoe. It's great to hear from you.
No, it's good to hear from you, too. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tell your folks hey for me, okay?
I will.
All right. Good. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Zoe. Sherry, what I got from that conversation is what a universal process that is.
Oh, God.
And how many thousands of times I've experienced that, and skills that we learn through practice from showing up and doing the work, and the possibility of moving beyond that. Incredible.
Yeah. It really is, and the awareness that it is. I love it that Zoe's talking about it in terms of it's not this content; it's a process, which is true, and that as we recognize that, as we realize that all that those voices are doing is now I'm getting a beating about this. Now I'm getting a beating about that. Now it's about that. Now it's about that. Now the criticism is because of that. Now the right? The process is exactly the same. And and we can actually get to a place of, I'm not having those conversations. Mm-hmm. I'm just not.
Mm-hmm.
We have that power.
Yeah, it's an incredible power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wish that I had, when I was busy doing a lot of things on a regular basis, that I realized I kind of wish I hadn't done. I wish I had known that that was a possibility, just to say, hey, I'm learning here, right? I'm learning.
Yes.
So this is, you know, I'm going to do a lot of things. I'm going to learn a lot of things that after I learn them, I'll wish that I had learned them a different way, but it doesn't work that way, so, yeah.
Yes. And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry. This is Bev calling from Kentucky.
Well, Bev, I was just talking about you.
I know, and I am happy to be here.
Truly. I hear you. Me too. What are you
I know.
To?
Well, you know, just as always, every person that shares, you know, I can so identify with it. And the previous caller talking about the voices, one thing that you've given us guidance on is watching the conversations and what's going on, that your guidance was that life rarely uses pronouns, especially you, and life doesn't even use sentences hardly. It just appears. It just drops in.
Yeah.
So I've been watching that, and I have found that to be so true. And and now that I've been doing it a while, it's so much easier to discern. It's like if it's going on about something, I can pretty much be sure where it's come. You know, it's self-hate. And
it's
life just
devil.
Kind of it. Life just will say, you know, call Susan or eat breakfast. Or it's just very simple,
mm-hmm.
and there's no discussion
mm-hmm.
about it. It's just a very
mm-hmm.
concrete. And I
mm-hmm.
see that. It's really been neat watching that play out.
Yeah, and it's never critical, is it?
Never.
It's never,
never
critical. Even, you know, even in those, like those kinds of situations that Zoe's talking about, you know, something, you know, I do something or say something and, you know, it doesn't go well. And I'll very likely in not too long a period of time get some guidance from life about it, but it's always kind and gentle and non-judgmental. It's just a point of clarity that's offered to me so that I learn that.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know you modeled that for me at the last retreat I went to. I forgot to ring the bell before I came in for guidance. And you asked me, you said, I didn't hear the bell, and, well, I didn't ring it. And all you said to me was, well, next time. Exactly what you're just talking about, and that has really stuck with me, how you modeled that for me. And there was no discussion about it. There was no, because I was just, like, horrified immediately. It was like, oh, my gosh, I forgot to ring the bell. And
I did something wrong.
Yeah, but you just said, you smiled at me and you said next time, and you can bet the next time I rang the bell, you know, and that is how I see life working in me. It's like, well, that really wasn't a good idea, but that's it. You know, once I recognize that, there's no need for anybody to go on about it. I just will make the effort to do better the next time.
Right. Which we always, that's the thing. You know, we always want to do our best. We do. We just do. And that doesn't always look like our best to other people, but it is. And then when we see something that enables us to do better, we do better.
Yes, and it's done. I'm really seeing that. It's like anytime it goes on and I get that feeling, that knot in my belly, It's like, oh no, oh no, this is not coming from life. Life does not operate that way. So it's just wonderful watching that happen. Now, do I still buy into it? Yes, a lot. But I'm really seeing it very, very clearly where it's coming from. So I guess that's the next step, and, you know, up the ladder, and you just keep going. So
that's
it's been really nice.
And Bev, it's really easy to see why people relate to the phrase still small voice.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what it is. It's just a simple little quiet messages.
And there's no doubt, if I get real still, there's just no doubt. And then when I follow through, these most amazing little things happen. It's just like, wow, you know, not always, but many, many times. It's just like, I would have never done it that way or thought of that, you know. And it's just great. So I am very thankful that I am learning, and I'm very excited about what's ahead. And I also am so grateful that every day of my life, if I choose to, I can be live with Sangha. Virtual meditations every day. You know, it might be reflective listening buddies. It may be the morning show. But every single day, I can sit in the presence and know other people are doing the same thing. It's such a, I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah. That's that non-separate reality. We really have an experience of it. There's just the voices that want to say you're alone or you don't belong, or well, they just don't have a chance after a while, because in fact we're never alone, and we're always with like-minded, like-hearted people, and so there we
are. Well, it's brought a lot of joy to my life, so gosho, and thank you for letting
me
share.
Thank you, Bev.
And
always a pleasure.
Thank you. Okay,
right.
Bye-bye.
Go happy. All right.
I will.
Bye-bye. All right.
Thanks for joining us, Bev. And I really appreciate that every single day, Sherry, that we have the opportunity to be live with Sangha. I hadn't thought of it in those terms. And yet, it's true. It's true.
Oh, yeah. We can be together every single day of our lives. Yeah.
Wow. Mm. Wow. And Sherry, we're going to hear from our Zen Awareness coaches, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
All right.
Build compassionate discipline into your life with Zen Awareness Coaching. Weekly calls and email check-ins provide support and accountability for waking up and ending suffering. Coaching assists us to recognize conditioned patterns and direct attention to what we want for our lives instead. If you have ever attended a There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, Zen Awareness Coaching is for you. To request a coach, email zenawarenesscoach@livingcompassion.org. Get a Zen Awareness Coach and choose to make a change for good for your practice and your life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Sherry, we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Gabriel.
Hey, Gabriel.
Hey, Gabriel.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry.
Good to hear your voice again.
Good to hear Sangha again. And I am looking at this center of the universe process that happens when I tap into that non-separate reality, and what happens is when I'm in that state or space of seeing how it's all one and there's no inside or outside, and life is living me and everything is happening on its own, there's still that like self there just freaking out and thinking it's all about himself, and that, like, you know, there's a ploy or a plot against him, and just this very extreme paranoia that happens. And it's very, very frightening. Although there's also luckily access to like knowing everything is okay. And having been through several rounds of this experience, knowing that everything works itself out anyway, but it's a very unpleasant state when I'm going through it. And I kind of know it, I'm going to come out of it, but at the same time, it helps talking about it.
And Gabriel, has this happened since the retreat?
Yes, it happened at this retreat, and it's happened many times. I have these, like, mind-blasting mystical experiences that I've had several times, and at other times I've had hospitalizations, and now I know enough to not share it with people because I'm scary to them, and then they kind of want to commit me. But I know everything is fine, but there's parts I record and listen, but like when I'm in that space, like picking up a recorder and recording is it can be very difficult because there's like no inside, no outside, no me, it's very difficult to explain.
And Gabriel, you know, because you've been practicing and because of everything you know, that what's freaking out is the ego, right? It's what wants to maintain a fixed position in this infinite flux.
Yeah.
Is that true?
I do know that. Yes. And it's like, what the ego is glimpsing or seeing is very threatening to it. Because it basically cancels its entire worldview. And so it feels very threatened by that.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Right. It not only cancels its worldview, it has the potential to cancel it.
Yeah.
Right? If you let go into that, then that's the end of ego, at least for that period of time.
Yeah. Yeah. And presence is very frightening to the ego and also the unknown and the mystery. And because it cancels it completely. And it's like the ego doesn't want this human being to fully, like, taste reality.
Yes.
Or whatever, or presence.
Yes, yes. Non-separate reality, wholeness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and one of the tricks it uses is like this megalomania, like where I feel like only what I am perceiving, it's just every note of intelligence gets like canceled in ego's world, and then I am like the master or of the universe or something, and I am creating all of reality for all beings everywhere, and it just goes into that like insanity. And then, you know, parts of me get very frightened. Like, I don't think just the ego, but also like maybe subpersonalities or something. It's very psychotic is the word that comes to mind.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. Interesting might be not the best word for it, but on a small scale that all of us experience, ego wants to be the master of the universe, right? What it does in most people's lives is become the master of their universe, right? So it's what we started out talking with Zoe about, right? The voice.
And it does a very shoddy it does a very shoddy job at it.
Yes, yes, yes. And so we can see it, right? An awful lot of people don't see it, right? And do believe that they are the center of the universe and that the voice in their head knows everything and can be in control, you know, all of that. But it's on a very small scale. And when we see through that, it's obvious, several things about it are obvious. One, that the ego doesn't know anything, that it can't, it doesn't predict the future, it doesn't know how anything works. It's just a conversation, it's just a story. There's no truth to it. And we can see that as we learn to step back from it. We recognize it for the fraud that it is. And then if we get into religious tales, you know, we have God and the devil, and the devil's desire to be as powerful as God and to take over and control everything the way God has control of everything, you know, in that particular myth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, to me, is what you're describing, where ego wants to have that position of being as powerful or more powerful than the intelligence, the energy that is this universe. And that's the position that it's fighting for when you go into these states, right? That
yeah.
it wants you to believe that it is as powerful as the intelligence animating.
And my time's almost up, but another quick thing I want to run by you. So there's a glimpse that I get that the universe is living everyone, and even
yes.
their egos, and even
yes.
everything. Like the universe
everything.
Is running absolutely
yes.
everything. It's running my mouth now, and your ears,
yes.
and my hand
yes.
holding the phone, and your every
yep.
everybody, and every single thing
yep.
that's happening is being done by the universe and not by the ego. And when the
right.
ego sees that, it's basically completely disarmed. But it keeps flailing.
Yes. 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 And, you know, I'm hopeful, Gabriel, that the process that you're in is seeing that, because these episodes happen with some regularity, that each time you retain a bit more of that awareness, that awareness is all, that the awareness of consciousness manifesting as this reality, and that in keeping I don't even know what language to use with it, but maintaining a sense of that, the fear that ego can generate becomes less powerful. Because the intelligence, the consciousness manifesting is benign.
Trustworthy.
Trustworthy. It's compassionate. It's loving. And that you identify more with that and less with the ego.
Yeah, that's the piece of information that the ego doesn't like, because the ego has a story that it's not benign and that it's not trustworthy.
Yes.
And that it's going to
yes.
lead me into hell. But the
mm-hmm.
truth is that ego leads me into hell. And when I surrender to that, I'm led into,
yes.
well, heaven.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's
so
very
each time,
nice.
Yeah, each time a little closer, a little more heaven, a little less fear of hell.
Yeah. Yeah. Because
mm-hmm.
ego is hell. That's my experience.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Whether on a small scale in a person's life where it's just beating the person up and trying to make them miserable, or in a large scale where it's happy to be destroying people and whole
yeah.
civilizations. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, they're both incomprehensible, like how the ego is so hellish and hateful and how the intelligence that animates is so like creative and benign and beautiful, and like it's impossible to comprehend either of these things for me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's just a mystery.
It's a mystery. Yes, it is. Yeah.
It's so nice to be able to talk about it. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome, Gabriel. Take good care of yourself.
I will do that.
All right.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Gabriel. Sure, it strikes me that open air is a place where we can go deep and talk about really all of our experience in a way that's safe and, safe and curious and exploring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's all okay. We always talk about there's nothing wrong, and to me, practice and sangha are how we prove that to ourselves.
Mm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. That's big.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yes. Hello, Michael. Hello, Sherry. This is Goli from Southern California.
Hello, Goli.
Hi, Goli.
Hey.
What's going on?
Oh, well, I am so happy to be on the call and to speak with you. I have been away from practice for a while, and just to jump back in. And
good.
Yes, and I've had my sister visiting, who lives far away in a different country, and with my niece and nephew, and I found the visit very difficult, and she's been in my life my whole life. She's 18 months older than me, and I'm slowly, other people have spoken to me, and I mean, she's got some anger issues and some behaviors going on, and I guess now that she's gone, I have this profound sense of sorrow for her and how she can't see how she behaves and how it antagonizes people. And, the way I've dealt with it is always to try to make excuses and try to always turn my back on other people and be there for her. But when that attack comes directly at myself, and, you know, when I'm tired, as I was this time, it's just really hard. And I would say some of my responses were not very skillful. And so I'm in this situation of being, you know, like I said, just feeling profoundly sad because, I mean, it would be easy to just turn my back on her like a lot of other people do and just completely ignore her or write her off. And I don't want to do that. But I also don't want to be battered by her, and bullied, which is what I think I've been most of my life. And, you know, what I really want to do is to just say, hey, you know, for goodness sake, get some help. And that's the only thing that I can do. And so I'm just, you know, like I said, I'm just left with this sense of hopelessness and helplessness and sorrow. So that's where I am with her.
Uh-huh. And how old are her children?
Her son is 19 and her daughter is 23. And she had her first child passed away when he was 8, and that did not help her mental, stability in any way, but I think it goes deeper than that. And as they were shouting at each other, they were all staying with me in my house. I mean, I see that her son has some very valid points, and he could be a fantastic teacher for her, but I think she doesn't really listen to what he's saying. So, you know, I just try to keep reminding myself of what you say, that each person is adequate to their life. But it's really hard to see someone that you love struggle like that and just have these blinders on and not get it, you know.
Uh-huh. And Goli, do you try to say anything to her, or do you mostly just kind of keep your head down and survive it?
Sometimes I try to say things, but it doesn't tend to go very well. And I keep my head down and survive it. And then this time, sometimes I blew up at her. I think when I went on my third There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, I spoke to the facilitators and I got her permission to buy her the book and send it to her. And she said, yes, that would be nice. And I did, when I was visiting, one time I saw it on her bedside table. But she said she found it rather complicated. And so I said, well, you can always pass it on to someone who can benefit. She said, no, I like to keep it here because, you know, you gave it to me. But, you know, I mean, if there was some way to approach and really be able to talk to her,
let me ask you this, Goli.
Yeah.
Have you ever written to her how you feel? Have you ever tried saying to her the equivalent of, you know, you're my sister, I love you, it makes me so sad that you seem so unhappy, or, you know, whatever, however you would
mm-hmm.
describe that.
Mm-hmm.
Just tell her how you feel, not what she's
yes.
doing wrong, but just how you feel.
I don't remember ever doing that. And if I did, it was so long ago in our childhood that I can't remember it. But no, I don't remember doing that. And one of the things she does is, you know, whatever one shares with her, she manages somehow to turn it around and use it against the person. But, I've never really, for the longest time, I've never really done that, you know.
Yeah, and so the other thing that that I wonder about with it, Goli, is to me, just the way you describe her, you said, you know, I wish she would get help. And I remember a mm-hmm. commercial on television when I was a kid, actually, and it showed this guy just acting out in this really kind of violent, crazy way. And the
mm-hmm.
tagline was, troublesome people are often people in trouble.
Mm.
And so pointing to the fact that, you know, people who behave in these really difficult ways often
mm-hmm.
don't have a choice. You know, they're not operating out of the same sort of playbook that the rest of folks are, right? And
mm-hmm.
so the assumption that she's in possession of all of her abilities and resources, and that she just chooses to be difficult rather
mm-hmm.
than she's really troubled and not really at choice about how she behaves. And if you feel that way about her,
mm-hmm.
then it's possible not to give her power to hurt you.
Yes, I do feel that way. And sometimes I've been really, since I've started practice, I've been a lot better. But this time, I think I was also kind of worn down, and the schedule we had was very heavy. And I didn't want to tolerate it in some point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can forgive yourself for that, right? You can understand long visits, people in your home, there's no escape. It's a difficult, mm-hmm. difficult situation, and you're not as patient and tolerant as you would like to be. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that happens. Absolutely, mm-hmm. that happens. And there's no... there's no reason to do anything with that other than, yeah, that happens. And it does, of course, help us to be more understanding and patient with other people, because when they get stressed and are in difficult circumstances, they probably don't behave quite, the way they'd like to either, right? So for you to... in a sense, make yourself vulnerable to her in that way of letting her know how you feel, not about her behaviors or toward you or blaming her or any of those kinds of things, but just that it makes it, just how you described how you're feeling now, that you're really sad. It's painful. You wish that that the relationship were better, or that they're, you love her. You love her, and you...
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a wonderful idea, Sherry. Thank you. I feel like that's... I do actually do better in writing because it gives me time to frame my thoughts and to think it and rethink it.
Talk it over with the mentor. Right? Do some two-handed recordings and let the part of you who is hurt, who gets upset, who's probably angry, has taken a lot of, we could say, abuse from this older sister. And so to let those folks get really clear about what's going on, how they feel, and then talk it over with the mentor and what you would like to offer to your sister at this point.
Yes, I love that. I love that the perspective of coming from a very authentic place rather than just pretending that something happened and we're all okay.
Right. So, yeah. And from that place of authenticity, you can't be hurt. If she comes at you, that's what happened. And kind of a blessing that she lives far away in another country. If she will have a correspondence with you, then even if she, strikes out at you or whatever, you have time to sit with that and process it and work through it and reach out again.
Yes. I will do that.
Good.
Thank you.
Good.
This was such a gift to hear your voice and come back down to earth and, be in this place with Sangha that I love to be in. So thank you so much for taking my call.
Oh, no, you're so welcome. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you, Sherry. It's good to be here.
Thank you, Goli. All
right. Deep gusto. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Goli. Sherry, I heard a lot of kindness and compassion and generosity and a really broad perspective that's possible for us.
Goes right there with that communication book, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It does.
Yes, it does.
Just using those skills that we have to choose kindness and compassion over what ego wants to do to us and do to others in the process.
We are at the end of the show here.
I saw that.
Oh, thank you.
I just saw that myself. So, well, thank you. And
thank everyone. Yes.
And thanks to everyone. Yeah, yeah. And we'll see you soon, huh?
See you soon. Don't forget to treasure yourself and go happy.
All right. Always good things to remember. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.